Welcome to OK Sis. We are two cultural observers
and curious minds who happen to be related.
I'm Scout.
And I'm Maddie. Get ready for some serious sororal energy
as we chat about and comment on one another's current fixation of the week.
Ready, sisters? Welcome back to OK Sis. My name is Maddie.
And I am Scout. I am the older sister of Mads by 3 years. And actually, I think it's like 2 years and 9 months or 10 months, but pretty much 3 years.
I love how you have to declare that just so that the listeners are aware of your maturity and authority in this relationship. Actually, not authority. I usually run this shit.
Excuse me. I have a lot of authority when it comes to wisdom, advice, tips, and tricks. You just have more of the authority on everything else.
That is true. You dominate that arena of OK Sis, the spirituality, the wisdom. You bring the sophistication. And then I kind of layer on the silliness and the laughs, you know, that keep the entertainment going.
Yeah. Who do people really show up for is the question. Is it you? Is it me? I'm going to say it's both of us together.
Absolutely.
It's who we are when we are put into the same room.
It's a harmony. It's a harmonious relationship.
Oi. Okay. I mean, goes up and down. I mean, it's a, I don't know about harmony, but it's definitely a composition of intense notes and then some nice lovely notes and then some intenser notes.
Yeah. The volume inside of this bus is astronomical.
Yeah, that's what I say, not you. That's what I say because you're fucking loud.
Yeah. Okay, anyways.
Like, I'm worried.
Anyways, let's just, like, move right along. Okay, so a couple updates. One, I literally, right before we started recording, just read the last sweetness, the last sweet sentence of Untamed by Glennon Doyle. And we are going to have a whole, you know, we need to do a book, like a book, you know, everyone knows we're big bibliophiles. So we're going to do a huge book, a book review. I don't know. But we'll do a whole fix me up on Untamed specifically, because as Scout had mentioned during her glowing review of it, it should be required reading for every woman. And we are speaking to women. And we're speaking to the women, so we need to require them to read it.
I'm so happy that you picked it up and that you trusted me on this one, because Glennon Doyle is a little bit more in, like, my camp of women that I read, like Elizabeth Gilbert's and Rachel Hollis and Marie Forleo, and she's more in that camp. So I was so stoked that you took my glowing review and read it and felt just and resonated with it just as much as I did, which I think we'll go over later, is that this book literally resonates with every type of woman at any age. It's insane how universal it is and how poignant it is for every, like, different journey and walks of life and, you know, gender orientation. Like, there's just so much going on that just resonates with fucking everybody.
There's no way to read that book and not feel like your heart skip a beat. Like, there is not one, any person is going to, as you said, resonate with something, some sort of wisdom and little knowledge. But yeah, so we'll do a full breakdown, because I think that's really important. It's really, really important.
I have an update.
Okay, go ahead.
It has been 1 week since I have switched over to natural deodorant.
Oh, yes.
And yeah, it is going phenomenally well. You know, like, I put it on twice a day just to, because I know for the first 2 weeks you're going through detox and you're supposed to A, sweat a lot more, and B, potentially smell. Nobody has told me that I smell, and I've asked people. I don't believe that I've smelled at all, which is incredible. I'm using the Drunk Elephant one. And the only time I profusely sweat, since, you know, I'm used to using an antiperspirant, is when I go for my morning walks. Like, it's a fucking shower. But other than that, I really am not sweating any more than usual, I think. And I smell great. Like, I actually prefer, I think I smelled worse with my old deodorant, if I'm being honest. Like, in the morning with my old deodorant, I'd be like, I have to shower now. But with this one, it's so soothing, and it's like a lotion, so it moisturizes. I am really thriving on the natural deodorant train right now.
All right. Well, A listener did point out to us that in earlier episodes, we said that we would try natural deodorant only and only if we were in quarantine. And little did we know that this...
that was coming for us.
Yeah. So, but the thing about me that if anyone remembers was I was getting insane rashes from... And I tried multiple natural deodorants. I got crazy rashes.
That's from the baking soda.
Okay. And... And I developed skin masses, skin lumps that were in my armpit. I mean, this is That's just disgusting. I mean, awful, really uncomfortable. And so I was like, you know what? Secret deodorant. I will never betray you again. But I also understand that it's not, you know, the best for our lymph nodes.
Why don't you just try the Drunk Elephant one that I'm doing? Because honestly, the results are fantastic.
All right. So we'll try it. We'll see.
I'm even literally walking outside in tank tops. Like, that's how confident I am in this natural deodorant.
Yeah, that's a you are brave.
I'm still in that 2 week like detox period, and it's great. Anyways, highly recommend.
Great update. Okay. Mads, next I would like to discuss Kendall Jenner's home. So for those of you who don't know, I would pause this podcast and go watch Kendall Jenner's Architectural Digest YouTube video tour, what have you. I watched this, and just a spoiler alert, you're going to get depressed because of the beauty, because of the, you are going to be so envious of this incredible home and abode.
No.
Now, hold
no.
on.
No.
I don't.
Wrong mindset.
Okay. I don't care what you think right now, because this is just, it has completely altered my entire dream and existence of what a home should look like. Now,
she's an expander. She's your home expander. She's my home. Wonderful.
She is my home expander. That is a great way to put it. Now, if you have not seen it, it's obviously, I think what's the most jarring is it's such a departure from the classic Kardashian interior design style.
This is why I've always liked Kendall Jenner. You always make fun of me for saying Kendall is my favorite, but she is. She's the most sophisticated, the most culturally in tune, the most high fashion, high couture, high art, all that stuff. Like, I love her.
Yeah, I was going to say, we just watched it right before because I needed Scout to watch it before we discuss it and dissect it. And, you know, her with the copper rings, with the art basil, with all of it. It felt so you, Scout. Like, you feel like you would be, and the painting, she has a whole painting room. Like, Scout, you would be... You and Kendall Jenner are soulmates. I mean, I have to say it.
Thank you. This is what I've been trying to tell people. But every time I'm like, I love Kendall, people think I'm insane.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
I think she is. She hasn't gotten into the complete like changing her body to be X, Y, and Z. Like, yes, her body's gorgeous and goals and whatever. But I mean, she doesn't get so much more natural.
Yeah.
She doesn't get the lip injections and the butt injections, and she's just her natural self. She does super sophisticated. She's on a different taste level than the rest of the Kardashians, in a sense that I resonate with her so much. Like, I feel like we'd be friends if we went to college together, you know, if she wasn't a Kardashian. But this is proof that I was right about Kendall Jenner.
Yeah, you are right. So some highlights from the home. All the archways, I'm just drooling. All the rugs,
the windows.
That one corridor with the windows on both sides, very It's Complicated-esque, very Nancy Myers vibes. The kitchen, very, oh, talk about Nancy Myers vibes. That dark green cabinetry with the marble and then the hanging pots. I mean, can you just imagine, like, oh. And then also what I love about her is, you know, she says it's a U-shape and it comes out to the pool, and like, she loves how awkward and old looking the pool is. Like, she didn't reconstruct it to make it that modern square pool that all the Kardashians have, like that infinity looking, you know, which is beautiful, but it's just not her style. She didn't conform to the Kardashianism, and I have so much more respect for her. This video has changed my entire outlook on Kendall Jenner and her placement within the Kardashian sphere. And I am here to say I'm a Kendall Jenner stan. And you, if you ever want to invite me over, I will marvel and just use your home as it is intended.
Yeah. And I think that I don't even consider her part of the Kardashian clan. I totally consider her outside because I think she's so different than the rest of them. And the home really did surprise me in the sense that it looked like the size was very approachable.
I know,
like
it looks
very
like there's
attainable.
Only, there's only two bathrooms, which is...
Well, I'm sure there's probably three, yeah. But it's just the size. I mean, look, it's a big house, but, you know, if you think of a Kardashian and you think like a huge mansion overlooking whatever and this and that. So it was really beautiful, really beautifully done, really good taste. Everything you can tell was of super high quality, not because of it being showy, but because of like the artistry behind each of her furniture pieces, et cetera. And everything was super intentional. So so happy that you love Kendall like I love Kendall. Because I think she's great. And she's also quite eloquent. She's very eloquent.
And that outfit. Oh,
oh God. Chic. Kill me now. Would I wear that?
Would be sporting that shit. Was it Gucci? Was it all Gucci? What was it?
It's Fendi? Definitely like a vintage Versace something. Or Fendi. It's definitely something like that.
Oh, my God. She is
It's super 50s. Like, I could probably find something like that at a vintage store.
She's exquisite. Okay. Wow. I mean... This is why celebrities do Architectural Digest, because there is so much insight. A home can tell you so much about an individual. And it is just apparent that Kendall Jenner is officially the best Kardashian. I'm going on the record and saying it.
Oh, thank God. Yeah. Thank God you've caught up with me on this. Yeah. I'm so happy about it.
I was blind before, and now I am rebirthed.
If I had to choose one Kardashian to have, like, a wine night with, it would be Kendall. Like, hands fucking down.
Oh my God. I mean, anything to get into that house now, actually. Like, oh wow. Yeah. All right. Yeah. Well,
anyways,
Kendall, if you're listening,
everybody go watch
Kendall,
it on YouTube.
If you're listening, we'd love to come over and like have Shabbat. Like, we could just like, you know, cook in your green kitchen. Like, I'm so here for it.
We'll bring the sugar fish.
We'll bring the sugar fish and sit on your cloud couch, and it'll just be a grand time.
Yeah, and sleepover. Okay, thanks. That was good. I'm gonna actually start watching Architectural Digest because one of my favorite things to do is think about interior decor in houses and all that.
They
it's like
do.
Literally I am on Zillow more than I should be these days.
They
like, I'm on Zillow more than I am on Instagram.
They do an incredible job. It's like the elevated version of MTV Cribs. And
love
you
Cribs.
You need to watch Mark Ronson's home on Architectural Digest. You're going to just swoon. If you loved Kendall's, you're going to love his. He has this like Spanish old style home in Silver Lake. Like, oh, so Mark Ronson.
Yeah, that's, but like Spanish style is so much more you.
That's
I'm
true.
So much more mid-century. Like, I want floor to ceiling windows. I want a rectangle. I want it to look like a Japanese house. Like,
there's something for you. There's something for you on Architectural Digest YouTube. I think that was my current fixation a while ago. It was. Because I watched one day, I sat down and watched every single celebrity home. They have everyone that you can imagine. It's a really, really, apparently there is a theory though that people do it when they're about to move so that the value of the home increases because it's been on Architectural Digest's YouTube channel.
I don't think Kendall needs Architectural Digest to up the quality of her
this
home.
Is true.
It's just, you could just say it's Kendall Jenner's house. Anyways, let's go through a little bit of housekeeping, guys. Just so you know, we have a secret Facebook group. It's OK Sisters. Link is in the show notes. And it's just a really great community of women who listen to the podcast and are here to support each other through whatever. So it's awesome. And then we have an Instagram at OK Sis Podcast. We have a newsletter that comes out every Monday. You will either get one today if you're listening to this very early in the morning, or if you're listening to this later in the day, you've already got one. It comes out every morning. It's super fucking cute, and it has some inspirational quotes, products, and a little message from Mads and me. And then, yeah, that's about it. You can rate, review, subscribe, woohoo, because we love it when you guys rate, and we love it when you review, and that's our favorite part is reading the reviews. So,
and also I've been featuring some reviews on our Instagram stories, so if you want to be featured, I mean, just leave a very silly and thought through review, and we'll post it.
Yeah,
we'll post that, baby.
Okay, let's get into this episode.
Oh, guys, this is a delightful episode. We interviewed Aishwarya. She is the founder of Brightland, which is the olive oil heard around the world, heard around the Instagram. You have probably seen this olive oil on Instagram. It's like the millennial trendy olive oil that looks just, I mean, talk about interior design and home decor. I mean, it fits in so perfectly within the products of your home. And not only that, it's like a very, very sustainable and no chemicals type of olive oil. She kind of dropped some insane facts about olive oil that I think a lot of us are not aware of. There's tons of unprocessed things in our olive oil that you're getting from the grocery store. So just be really careful when you're going out to buy an olive oil, and just go buy Brightland.
Yeah, she's lovely. And you're right. She dropped some stuff. I was like, what the fuck am I putting in my food? So, and it's a really beautiful, it would look really good in Kendall Jenner's home, actually, Brightland. It would like super fit into that kitchen.
Brightland, if you want to like do an influencer campaign with Kendall Jenner, we'll just like take a percentage, you know?
No, well, it'll be from us. We're going to send Kendall Jenner Brightland.
Once we have Kendall Jenner's address, all we're going to do is send her Brightland. We won't show up, but we're just going to send her.
Yeah, we're just going to send it in a really beautiful box, and there'll be a handwritten note and a photo of us, so she knows what we look like.
Ashwarya was so delightful. She was so gracious with her time, and entrepreneur, a woman-led business. I mean, all the things that we are OK Sis approved. Trendy
cute branding, quality product, health and wellness, inspirational woman. You're going to love it, sisters.
Exactly.
See you on the flip side. What? You didn't like that?
did you stop it already?
No, okay, I haven't stopped recording.
Oh my God.
I'm going to keep this part in too.
You have never, ever.
Shut up.
Okay, ready?
Okay.
Enjoy
sisters. Ashwarya Iyer is the founder and CEO of Brightland, a modern pantry essentials company based in LA that has been featured by the New York Times, Vogue, Goop, Fast Company, and more. Previously, Ashwarya spent over a decade in public affairs and corporate communications at various technology companies in both New York City and LA. She started her career at L'Oreal in the luxury products division at Lancome and is a graduate of NYU's Gallatin School of Individualized Study. Ashwarya is originally from Texas and now lives in LA with her husband and dogs, Crosby and Madison. Without further ado, Ashwarya.
Hi, thank you so much for having me.
We are so excited to talk to you. I mean, Brightland has been all over my Instagram for years now, and Scout and I finally were able to try it. We needed to get you on the pod because this brand is just, it is so delightful and obviously delicious. So we'll get into everything about Brightland. We're so excited to have you.
Thank you so much for the kind words.
I was on a walk. I go for a walk every single morning, and there's a coffee shop near my house called Communal Coffee, and it says coffee and flowers on a big mural, and they sell Brightland there. I was getting a matcha, and I was like, oh my God, it fits so perfectly into their aesthetic. It was so cute.
Yay. We love them. They're a wonderful little store.
Incredible.
Yeah,
okay, before we get
so
into
adorable.
Everything olive oil, because I have all of the questions, let's do current fixations.
Okay. I will start. My current fixation right now is Gabby Bernstein. So she is a spiritual teacher, an author, etc. And I first was introduced to her. I went to Oprah's Super Soul session a few years ago at UCLA. It was just like a day conference. Tony Robbins was there. It was amazing. And she spoke, and I didn't really connect with her in her speech at all, really. And I was a little disappointed because I'd heard such great things about her. I think it might have been an off day, or maybe her message I wasn't ready to receive. And then I bought her two first books and read them while I was on my honeymoon. And I felt so connected, and because And all of a sudden, she really sort of helped me jump onto my spiritual journey, because in her first book, Spirit Junkie, it's very approachable, very girly, very millennial-esque. And so it put the spiritual terms into very easy to digest situations. So I read those two books and I became it was kind of like my introduction into spirituality. And then I've kind of followed her over the years. I listen to her when she's a guest on podcasts, and I just started reading The Universe Has Your Back. And it's amazing. I'm about halfway through, and it really is. You can tell she's so evolved from her first book to now, and the principles are getting a little bit more foundational and a little bit more elevated. And so she's just amazing. Her spirit is so great. Her messaging is amazing right now. The Universe Has Your Back is all about choosing when you make choices to be choosing out of love versus fear. And I actually texted Mads this morning. She didn't answer me, but I texted her because I really want her to read this book too, because it's just an amazing spiritual self-development book that I think we, you know, even if you don't believe in a higher power, which can, I guess, deter you from the book, there are principles in there that are really great for everybody.
I love that. You know, I am aware of Gabby Bernstein and her, you know, presence on the internet. And I know that she's kind of like the cool spiritual gal. So I think if it's relatable enough, I could dabble in it.
Yeah, I think you should try. I think you might find some good gems.
Fabulous. Okay. So my current fixation, everyone, I have been loving wide mouth 32-ounce mason jars. So literally recently, I think I am just in the TikTok world and I am so embedded in it that I have now, you know, everything around me has just been influenced by this, you know, crazy platform that is TikTok, and all the cute Gen Z girls are drinking out of these mason jars and they have gold medal straws. So, you know, I'm just becoming an Emma Chamberlain. I'm becoming a Gen Zer. As everyone knows, I'm obsessed with that generation. And it just is obviously very aesthetically pleasing, but then it can hold 32 ounces. So you're drinking a lot. And of course, I have my Clever Blends in here, which is this coffee blend with superfood. So it has ashwagandha in it, which, you know, we're ashwagandha apologists over here. So that has been part of my ritual, is making a little, you know, superfood coffee in my wide mouth mason jar.
Okay.
No comment.
I mean, more power to you. That sounds great. That sounds, I mean, the only problem with mason jars, it's hard to hold them because they're so big, you know?
Yeah, but then you have the little straw, so it's kind of cute. And you just kind of move your head and you drink out of it.
Move your head.
I've been making a lot of mango smoothies, so this is inspiring me to throw them into this large jar.
Oh, you have to. And you know what? It goes well with Brightland. It goes well with the aesthetic. It's just a vibe. It's a great vibe. Okay, Aishwarya, what is your current fixation?
I have two. One is intersectional environmentalism, and the other is cheesy garlic bread.
Wow, these are just like very on. What a diverse set of interests. This is what we're looking for. Okay, go ahead.
So the concept of intersectional environmentalism is basically an inclusive, anti-racist extension of environmentalism that advocates for both protection of people and the planet. And you think that would be very elementary, but it actually isn't. And it was coined by an intersectional environmentalist kind of activist named Leah Thomas. She was an employee at Patagonia and had a, you know, kind of firsthand experience into what environmentalism and what leading the way could look like. But she found that there were gaps when it came to talking about, you know, people and especially race. And so she coined this term, I think, for Brightland. It's something that we think about really deeply as we think about like food source and food production and where our food's coming from and the farmers we work with. So I've been studying it and I'm actually going to be working with Leah on building it out into our DNA of our company before we get any larger.
I love that. I was actually going to mention, Leah, because we included her in a roundup of Black women in wellness. And I did see that she was on Vogue, you know, coining this term. And that is incredible that you guys are going to work together. It's such a perfect synergy, I think,
also,
between you two.
I just hopped on a phone call with Leah. We were talking about working together with my agency. And so she told me her whole story and she kind of exploded on Instagram lately. And so it's so funny. It's just like come so full circle. We were talking about intersectional environmentalism, which I thought was such an interesting thing. So when you said that, I was like, oh, I wonder if she's talking about Leah. That's so funny.
Yeah. Oh, I love that.
Totally.
It's a small world. Yeah. I'm excited to see how we end up working together and then end up kind of activating change. So that's one. And then the second is cheesy garlic bread, because I have not stopped thinking about Pizza Hut from the 80s. And my parents and I used to visit
the Pizza Hut restaurant, and we would sit there and order garlic bread. We would order breadsticks and the pizza, and there'd be a salad buffet that we would go get salad from. And that cheesy garlic bread is so outstanding, and I have not been able to find it anywhere. I've not been able to recreate it. I actually have all of the ingredients. I've been scouring recipes, and I have all of the ingredients, and I'm going to try it tonight. But it's been like on my mind for probably 3 to 4 weeks now. So
that kind of reminds me, Mads, of Pat and Oscar's garlic bread. I feel like that's our childhood parallel. Like, we always got the garlic bread from Pat and Oscar's, right?
Mm-hmm. I know. Once you have like a craving like that, and then also kind of to explore, you know, how you can make it even like a bit healthier, or, you know, you're going to make it from home, so it's going to feel more wholesome in a way. And I love that. That's great. What I love these. This is such a diverse set
of current fixations.
We are off to a great start.
Okay, but let's get into Brightland, because it's obviously cute, it's obviously quality product, and has a really great mission. So describe Brightland to us for our listeners who have not seen it on shelves, which I'm sure they'll now be like, oh yeah, I've totally seen it on shelves. Describe it to us and tell us what you do.
Yes. So Brightland is a modern pantry essentials company. Our hero products are extra virgin olive oils from California. We bottle them in white matte bottles, glass bottles. So if you've seen them with the kind of the glass bottles that are white, and we really believe in color, and the colors that we ended up choosing for our brand came from produce, the colors of like fresh produce in California. So whether it's like squash blossoms or purple cauliflower, that's incorporated into our brand color standpoint. And we launched 2 years ago, so we're 2 years old as of June 1st. And what else can I tell you? It's been such a wild ride. You know, honestly, we're a tiny team. It's three of us kind of in the headquarters, and then we work with a number of part-time sort of freelance consultants, but really small team, heads down, and we're about to launch our next category outside of olive oil on July 15th, which I'm so excited about.
I know, I was going to say, we need to know about like other products, because you say that, I love this, a modern pantry essentials company. Right now you only offer olive oil. So it's going to be, I can just see you guys taking over the pantry and just having a whole line. It's going to be so epic and, you know, aesthetically pleasing.
Wait, but this is probably going to come out after July 15th. So can you share, or is that no yet?
Oh, if it's coming out after July 15th.
Yeah, share.
Yeah. So on July 15th, we're debuting vinegars. So we are working with a family farm in California, in the Central Coast, kind of close to Atascadero. And they have a fermenter, you know, the couple, one of them is considered like a kind of an expert fermenter. And the vinegars are double fermented. One is a blackberry balsamic. So they source the grapes from wineries up in Northern California. And then the blackberries are triple crown blackberries that have been double fermented, and they're in, they're on their farm, and they pick them from their farm. And the other vinegar that we're launching with is a California citrus champagne. So it's champagne vinegar, double fermented with Valencia and navel oranges that come from a neighboring farm. And
my husband's gonna lose it. That sounds amazing.
This is like a local sustainable dream. I do, before we get more into it, I do wanna read something from your website, because I read this passage and I was like, you just understand what Brightland stands for when you hear this. So it says, living in a golden state means savoring the simple moments, everyday elegance, cozy days and slow nights, locally sourced ingredients, warm, crusty bread, stew, and a good book, understanding traceability, endless curiosity, beauty from the inside out, seeking the truth, lazy evening strolls, analog moments, nourishing body, heart, and soul, putting away the screens, California life, conscious actions toward better health, reading the newspaper, verve and vibrancy, being fully engaged in the present, living well. Gosh. Okay, a few things. One, I mean, we're big California girls because we were born and raised in Southern California and we live here. Two, this kind of feels like quarantine in a way. And I don't know if you—
Oh my God.
You know what I mean? Yes. Like, to me, this embodied, like, this, you know, obviously we've talked a lot about, you know, the stress and anxiety of the pandemic, of course, and, but there has been something really beautiful in slowing down and, you know, taking those evening walks, lazy evening strolls, and it just, you know, sitting down with a good book, and, you know, people are probably going back to cooking. And so I kind of want to ask a little bit about Brightland in quarantine. Like, I would imagine that you guys have seen a spike in demand just because people are kind of resorting back to those domestic kind of, you know, family, lazy nights and, you know, cooking in and what have you. So talk to us a little bit about how that has transitioned for you guys.
Yeah. So I wrote these words down in early 2018 when I felt like everyone was picking up their suitcases and rushing off to Bali. And just, I could see screen addiction kind of picking up steam. And I felt like, oh my God, I want things to slow down. I want the world around me to slow down. I want to slow down. And I think it's healthy to put your phone away at times. And this was my, I think Brightland for me, just I wanted us to embody all of those things. So then fast forward to spring 2020, we are basically living this, but not, it's not our choice. So in some ways it's been such a weird kind of thing to see, but at the same time, I think if anything, people are saying, okay, well, we're not going out to eat right now. We're not, you know, going on a fancy vacation. So let's be more mindful about what we're eating. Let's be more mindful about what we're cooking, and let's add a little bit of joy into that everyday thing that has become routine and a bit mundane. And so we've absolutely seen, you know, an uptick in customers and people, first time customers who have been excited to, I think, incorporate something like Brightland into their
I'm starting to understand, as we've talked to so many women entrepreneurs who have products, that it's about the product and the quality of the product and the design of the product, but it's so also clearly about a lifestyle. And there's almost like this lifestyle purpose behind products, which I think that Brightland does really well, especially with this kind of excerpt that you guys do. You know, it's olive oil, but it's also a moment in time. It's slowing down. It's experiencing it. Can you kind of talk about that connection to your product essentially and how it has a deeper purpose and a deeper kind of vibe, mood, you know, ambiance to the experience of using Brightland?
Yeah, I think you answered your own question in a certain way, because, you know, when I took a step back and thought about what is the brand that I want to build, and this was in 2017 when I really started committing a lot of time to working on this, I thought a lot about the idea that a lot of people, especially if you have investors and you have a lot of, I think, pressure to grow quickly, you want to become everything to everybody. And I thought a lot about, okay, rather than going that direction, why don't we focus a little more within and think about nourishment and think about things in a more, I think, mindful way. And so that was the first piece of it. And then the second piece was a little bit, you know, I felt like the world was moving really quickly and I personally wanted to slow down. I wanted to stay in and cook more. And what does that mean? And how can our products serve as like a conduit and as a tool for people to say, okay, I actually need to use both hands to, this is silly, but like to knead some focaccia and drizzle Brightland luxuriously over it. I can't just be focused on getting that great, like, shot on, you know, for Instagram. And that was the kind of impetus and really the mission behind it. And it's hard, you know, because ultimately we are a digital brand. So we do rely on Instagram. We do rely on people sharing and posting and creating content in that way. But I always like to say, you know, even the way that we think about Instagram, we only post 3 or 4 times a week. Like, we don't post every single day. We don't post on stories every single day because we don't want to turn into this like relentless content engine. I would rather be a bit slower about it and take a step back and say, okay, we don't always have to have something to say.
Yeah, it feels like this this mission permeates into not just the product and the experience of using the product, but also in your company, as in, you know, within your internal teams and the way within your operation, which I think is really admirable. And I don't think a lot of companies can say something like that, where the intention, even with posting, and yes, I mean, your branding, I mean, it goes without saying, your branding is like impeccable. So, you know, people are going to want to capture it, and it's a very perfect aesthetic for Instagram and things like that. But it's really nice to hear that your intention behind your social media strategy is also the same as the experience that comes with the product. I think that's
there's
incredible.
Also like a kind of, I'm just realizing this sort of similarity and sort of a beautiful effect on Instagram as we were talking. You know, you said, you know, of course you want it to be shared and you are a digital brand in that sense, but there's also this sort of surgence of Instagram created a very big emphasis on aesthetics and things looking a certain way, in a sense that we're creating our environment, right? And so brands have almost followed suit because they want to be captured on Instagram in a beautiful way, but then kind of the double effect of that is that Brightland looks beautiful on my kitchen, right? Like, branding has been, Instagram has made branding such an important factor of the process, which I think is a really beautiful thing, because in that way, we're also decorating our physical lives with the products that we choose to purchase.
Yes, exactly. It's like both analog and digital. But at the same time, I think, you know, 2 years, like when I was thinking about what our brand visually would look like, that was in 2017. So now we're in 2020. And I have to say, I think that it's really noisy, and brands that I've seen launch afterwards, and even us, you know, in terms of inspiration, we have to be really careful about not looking at what other people are doing, because it's almost too easy to then get caught in this like whirlwind of everything looking the same. And so I like to, you know, tell my team, like, okay, let's go to a museum, or let's buy some coffee table books that have nothing to do with any of anything current. Let's look at the past. Let's look at, you know, historical brands. Let's try to dig from within if we can, because otherwise, I don't know, you can end up with sameness. And one thing that I'll add to that, one of our, for Vinegar, our photo shoot inspiration was very specific. I said, I really want it to look like the south of France in the 80s, or like a French countryside, and kind of the mix of those two things. And that's the route that we went in terms of the kind of the world we created from a photography standpoint.
Yeah, I mean, that definitely comes across. So I kind of want to talk a bit about your background, because, you know, you came from public affairs and corporate communications, which doesn't really like, you know, scream trendy olive oil brand. So kind of talk about the transition and, you know, why olive oil specifically, why that initial ingredient or initial product?
Yeah, absolutely. So I graduated into the recession. I graduated in 2008. I started at L'Oreal and then went to a startup, got laid off because of the recession, and was just like desperately looking for a job. I think I was doing some internships, and then eventually got a job at a finance technology company, and I was there for about 4 years. It was the most formative kind of years for my career, because I learned what it was like to move quickly, to be nimble. We went from like 30 to 200 employees in a matter of couple of years. And I saw leadership, like how-tos and then what not to do. And it was just an incredible experience. But all that to say, I didn't spend much time at home. Like, I work was everything. And afterwards, I was very social. So I would go out at night. I had a spreadsheet of like 600 restaurants, and was bopping around the city doing that. And it was before wellness was even a topic of conversation, honestly. Like, that's just not, we were, you know, drinking wine and eating massive cheese plates and like called that wellness, I suppose. And around year 8 of living in New York, I started cooking more, like slowed down a little bit. And one thing that I kept noticing was that I kept getting these like awkward belly aches. And at first I thought that it was bread, and then I thought that it was cheese, and thought it was spices, and kept cutting things out. And eventually the only constant that was left was the cooking oil that I was using. And the more kind of research that I did, just Googling, it was olive oil. And
I found out that north of 70% of the olive oil that Americans consume is rotten, rancid, or it's been adulterated, which means that it's been blended with palm oil or canola oil or some sort of, you know, corn oil. And there's massive amounts of fraud happening in the industry. Like 60 Minutes has done some really interesting pieces about it if you're interested in checking it out. And we have a research section on our site that you can see that has a lot of external news sources citing the research that they've done. And I thought the whole thing was just so disgusting and weird. And when I asked friends, everyone was like, ew, I didn't know that this was happening. And I would ask y'all too, like, did you know that, you know, there's olive oil fraud?
I knew that there were certain restaurants, and I won't name them, that I would go to and my stomach would hurt. And then I figured out it's because of the oil they were using.
Right. And because there are mycotoxins, if it's rancid, and, it just bummed me out because you're not getting any of the health benefits that you think you're getting. Like, people talk about extra virgin olive oil as having this like amazing superfood, like incredible health benefits. But if you are not consuming something that's real, or if you're consuming something that's rotten or rancid already, the health benefits are zero. And if anything, it's hurting you. So I thought that this was ridiculous. And at first, you know, I think because I didn't come from a CPG or kind of the food background, at first, my first thought was like, okay, well, someone in the food industry who's famous and cool, like, they're going to do this. Like, it's not my business to start anything. And then the second thing that I thought was, oh, maybe I'll start like a certification program. So I, you know, thought about that and what that could look like. But then I ended up getting a job at a startup here in LA and moved out here and started visiting olive farms up and down kind of north, you know, Central Coast and Northern California. Was just so floored by what's happening here domestically from a production standpoint, quality, how they're thinking about just nutrient-dense farms, regenerative agriculture. And I was really excited and inspired and said, well, what if I start something that kind of celebrates the domestic olive oil production and create something that also is really emotionally resonant? So that was the, like, process. And then, of course, it was a ton of, like, inner critic, like, imposter syndrome of like, why the heck should you do this? So all in all, it took over 2 years for me to come to a decision to say, okay, I'm going to actually do this.
And talk us through those initial steps. Were you working full time, or did you quit your job to launch it, or did you kind of wait a few months? What did the logistics of that look like?
It was a bit of both. So I was working full time at a startup. I left and I started consulting. A friend of mine and I teamed up together because by then we had had each of us had had over a decade of public affairs and comms experience. So, and we had a good kind of list of LA and New York based startups that we had really kind of good relationships with. So we started consulting, and I think we worked with 13, 14 companies. And we both told each other, okay, well, we each have our own kind of business idea, so let's spend kind of evenings and weekends working on it. So that was what we did for the first like year. And then about a year and a half into that, I said, okay, I'm going to actually, I think I've done enough research. I think I have to dedicate more time full time. So we both decided to kind of, we basically narrowed down the number of clients we had. So at one point we had 6, and then we had 5, and then we had 4, and then 3 and 2. And then eventually we said, okay, let's just pause this indefinitely and work on our projects and our companies. So I spent about, you know, without the consulting piece, I spent about 7 months working on Brightland, kind of 100% heads down. And then we launched in June of 2018.
And did you guys have an initial investment, or was it all the money you had saved? Did you go out and raise money? How did that aspect look like?
It was my savings.
Damn,
so I
girl.
Decided not to raise money. I decided not to raise money because I had worked at 3 venture-backed startups that had each raised, you know, 30, 50, 60 million from all of the best kind of top tier investors. And I saw what it could do, and I saw its limitations as well. So I really wanted, and I also, the companies that I worked at were
all consumer technology or finance technology companies. They were not consumer products. So I didn't really understand that landscape of like, what does a consumer product investor look at? How does all I knew was that I saw some of these companies like Allbirds and Away start. And in year two, they had 500 employees and it just seemed like such rapid growth. And that I wasn't sure if that's what I wanted and that's what I wanted to build. And so I said, okay, why don't I just try to see how far, how much can I hustle and how much can I do with nothing and then see where that takes me, how far we can get. And then we can revisit and let's also see if people really even want to buy this. Are people excited about this? Because these are all things that no matter how many research studies or, you know, surveys that you do or even fancy consultants you hire, which I didn't do, but I know that, you know, companies certainly do that prior to launching, like you just don't know. And so that was the risk that I took. Also a privileged risk because I had accumulated savings and I am married. So I didn't need a salary for a little bit of time. I didn't take a salary. So these are all privileges that I have. And that is how we launched the company.
I want to ask you about marketing and about kind of, I mean, I think in also tech terms, I've only worked at tech startups my whole career. And in terms of like user acquisition and how you got customers in the beginning, like obviously I think the yes. branding must have helped just because it could fit nicely into other brands. And I think millennials really understand this type of brand, but how did you initially get that, you know, education across? And because I know that, you know, sustainability is at Brightland's core and you want to educate people about the, you know, evils of olive oil in this country, in this world. So talk to us about that initial like marketing of the product.
It's a good question because our website at one point, when you came to the homepage, it was very doomsday. Like it was very much like, this is a massive issue. Do you know what you're, it was almost like a dun, dun, dun. Do you know what you're, you know, eating kind of thing. And I had to take a step back and really think about, okay, you know what, let's lead with a little more optimism rather than like doomsday negativity, because it's really tempting to lead with that negativity from like a marketing or like a brand statement standpoint. So that's one piece of it, but tactically I understood PR and comms because that was the world that I came from. So I knew you have multiple routes when you launch a company. If you're well-funded, you can do many of these things at once. It's like you can do paid acquisition, which means you spend money on Facebook and Instagram and Google ads and all of that stuff. You can do PR. You can do a massive like influencer outreach, you know, where you maybe ping, like I had a friend who had a makeup brand or a skincare brand, and she reached out to 1,000 influencers and sent 1,000 people product before they launched so that it just blanketed Instagram the day that they launched. We didn't, so it depends on your budget. We did not have capacity to be able to do 1,000 person influencer launch. I did not come from like a paid acquisition background, especially for a physical good. So I didn't feel comfortable putting our eggs in that basket just yet without clear understanding of return on our investment. So the thing that I understood because of my own experience was PR. And I said, you know what, let's invest in a food PR firm who understands the food landscape. And so I brought on a wonderful PR firm called Becca PR for our launch. And they helped us get into the New York Times Tea Style magazine the day that we launched. And we decided to go with an exclusive. So only the Times that Style magazine covered us. So there was focus, which some people I think would also argue against that because they'd say, oh no, you should have been in like 10, 12 different publications that all wrote about you at the same time. But I decided to go with the focused route and that's how we launched. And that really helped put us on the map because it solidified our position from a brand and kind of mission standpoint. And those were our first customers. And many of them are still our customers because we do have a subscription component. So many of those people that joined that first day are still with us.
That's amazing, first of all. What a way to start with a bang, for sure. I want to talk a little bit. You just mentioned subscription. Subscription models, I believe, are such a smart way to do things. Can you talk a little bit about what that looks like for you guys?
Yes. So we have both a la carte and subscription. So you can buy our two hero products a la carte, and then we have additional kind of special flavored oils where we partner with artists and do artist label collaborations. So we have three of those special products. But the two hero products, Brightland's Awake and Alive, you can buy a la carte, or they come as a subscription. And you can, when we launched with quarterly subscription only because we wanted to understand, are people emailing us and asking us to move up their date, move back their date? So 3 months felt like a good amount of time that people would go through those two bottles. And what we found was that the majority of our customers were saying, hey, I already went through it. Can you move up my date? Or can I sign up for like a double subscription? And so we decided to introduce a monthly and a bi-monthly subscription. And so with that, it's, I think it's around 15% cheaper than buying them a la carte. You can cancel anytime, of course. And we include like a special gift in each order so that you feel, you know, our subscribers are really special and important to us. And then during this sort of pandemic, we've actually introduced some like subscriber only cooking classes and some other special delights for that, for just them.
Yeah, I was going to say that's a built-in community. I mean, the loyalty that comes with whenever you subscribe to a product, you are obviously, you know, cementing its importance in your life and your loyalty to that brand. So that's incredible because you, again, like, and as we were mentioning, Scout had mentioned earlier, I think products these days, it's not just enough to have a superior product. It is about fostering that community and that dialogue around it. And I love that. That's a really good approach. Did you guys start off doing subscriptions or did you kind of implement it down the line?
We started with subscription from the first day as a test. And we weren't sure, to be honest.
That's really smart.
But we learned a lot in the first 6-8 months, and then we started rolling out additional features. So like monthly or bi-monthly, and then the number two most asked feature right now is our customers want to be able to go in and adjust themselves because right now they have to always email us. So that's the next thing that we're working on.
Wow. I love it. Should we ask our favorite question, Mads?
Yes, please.
Okay. If you had to brag, we ask all of our beautiful guests this, if you had to brag about one thing that you've accomplished in your life, what would it be? And don't be humble.
Oh my goodness. I think it's bringing this brand to life. Really. I mean, I have exceeded my wildest dreams. I always tell people that when I was younger, I had small dreams. Like I wanted to be an optometrist and live in my suburb in Houston. I just didn't think of myself as being able to be any bigger or being able to do any more. And I think it's a function of coming from an immigrant family where safety and security is really valued. So I think that that was one piece of it. But I think it was also me. Like I had friends who wanted to be Supreme Court judges and all kinds of things. But I thought, oh no, like I was almost like shrinking myself a little bit. And so to now be doing what I'm doing and to be building a brand and a company and to be addressing 15 different parts at any given time, whether it's our supply chain or P&L, accounting, legal, social, PR, and to be doing all of that, I'm incredibly proud of myself.
Yay.
You're proud of you too.
That makes me so happy to
hear. Thank you.
Okay. Oh. Were you going to go, Mads? Sorry. Go.
Because I wanted to touch on, we're going to ask you to obviously pimp yourself out and tell everyone where they can buy Brightland. But I think I want to just ask about the retailers. So you are, as Scott mentioned, in coffee shops and really cute spaces. So talk to us about going into retail and kind of bringing the brand off of your website.
Yes, absolutely. I think for us, we always knew that we were going to be in like D2C world, it's called like omni-channel. And we always knew that we wanted to be a multi-channel brand. And the reason for that is because
ultimately, I want people to be able to see and feel and touch the brand, and I want them to be able to experience us around other like-minded products and other beautiful brands. And I don't think I didn't ever really want us to just live on our website in a one-dimensional way. And so pretty soon after launch, I think it was a month after launch, we started talking to retail partners and started partnering with folks like Communal Coffee and Regular Visitors in New York. And we're in about 150 or 200 stores now around the country. We also work with larger retailers. So Goop is a partner of ours. Huckberry is a partner of ours. Nordstrom, Neiman Marcus, Anthropologie. So we work with a kind of a nice wide variety of partners. We also work with some specialty grocers, some wine and cheese shops. So it's really nice to see the different use cases that somebody grabs a bottle of Brightland, whether it's like as a housewarming gift or, you know, Friday night, they're going to be making a big meal. So they grab it. So it's been really wonderful to see that. And it's wonderful to see us be accessible to, you know, we have stores in Minneapolis and in Cape Cod and in Florida. And so it's been a wonderful part of our strategy. And I just can't wait until this pandemic is sort of at a different stage where, you know, retail is a bigger part of everybody's life again.
Okay. Where can everyone find Brightland on social, online, anywhere? Where can you buy it?
Yes. So you can buy Brightland by going to our website, brightland.co. We are on social. We are, it's We Are Brightland is our Instagram handle. And if you want to sign up for our, we have a referral program. So if you want to refer some of your friends, go to our website and on the top right hand side, there's something about referral or something about, I actually don't remember what the words are, but you'll see it and you can refer friends. And every time friends buy some, then you also get some credit. And it's a really wonderful way to, spread the word and get beautiful olive oil.
I love that. Thank you so much for coming on. You can find us at OK Sis Podcast. Love you, sisters.
Love you, sisters.
Thank you so much for having me.